Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Many people think that their vote doesn't matter. They ask, what difference does one vote make? Well, every vote does matter. Our first guest today knows how important each vote is. Shelley Simons ran for state representative last year in Virginia, challenging an incumbent. The vote was exactly even. Each candidate got exactly 50% of the vote. The race was decided by drawing the names of the two candidates. With one more vote, Shelley would have been state representative. Instead, the seat went to the incumbent Republican. And that gave the Republicans a one-seat majority in the House of Representatives. So now the Republicans control the House. Following Shelley as our guest will be Congresswoman Donna Edwards of Maryland, talking about her conversations with Trump supporters as she traveled the country in her RV. First up is Shelley Simons, city councilor from Richmond, Virginia, and candidate for state representative. Shelley Simons, welcome to All Together Now.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Eleanor. I'm delighted to be with you all.
Wonderful. Well, I think you have one of the most interesting races in the history of the country. In 2017, you ran for a state representative in Virginia. And first, tell our listeners, why did you decide to run for a state rep?
Oh, well, I ran for the House of Delegates to represent Newport News, Virginia. And I've been elected to the Newport News School Board for about over 4 years, almost 5 years now. And I just love representing my constituents and trying to solve problems for people. I got my first angry phone call and managed to talk the person down. And after that, I was hooked. I was like, yes, I can do this politics thing. So I just want to get to the state level because I'm a former teacher and I have a lot of ideas for what we can do to improve education in the state of Virginia.
Fantastic. And so when you ran last year, you got exactly the same number of votes as your opponent, right?
Yes, yes. And, you know, it was a very stressful back and forth kind of situation because we were up during most of the recount. And in the end, we won the recount by one vote. And then on the following day, a panel of judges decided to give a vote to my opponent. And that ballot has been posted on the internet, and it's a fairly famous ballot for being one of the worst votes ever counted ever. That's just my opinion. Mm-hmm. But because of that vote, we were then at a tie. And mm-hmm. the State Board of Elections decided to do what they call a drawing of lots. And they chose this lovely ceramic bowl and put two names in film canisters. And we had a drawing of lots in Richmond. And it was an incredible media circus. And unfortunately, my opponent did not show up to the drawing of lots. So with me and my family facing the hundreds of cameras of media from around the world, because it's such an unusual thing to have happened.
Very unusual. I don't think I've ever heard of that happening. You know, races can be close, but really to have exactly the same number of votes is kind of shocking. And I'm curious, tell us a little more. It said you won the recount by one vote. What was that ballot like that the judges gave to your opponent?
Well, it had a number of markings. So there was no clear pattern in that vote, in that ballot. And, you know, people say it was a messed up ballot. It was a soiled ballot that should never have been counted. And after what happened in Florida with Bush v. Gore, all of the states were encouraged to create these guidelines for how to interpret ballots. And Virginia did that. So we had a handbook of acceptable votes. And I believe, this is my opinion, that the ballot that was accepted was actually in there as do not count this vote because it had too many marks. There were check marks. There was no pattern. There were bubbles. So it was a very illegible ballot.
So, but the judges decided to give that to count that ballot and have that vote go to your opponent, which meant instead of you winning by one vote, you were back to exactly tied.
Yes, yes, that was the case. And you know, during all of this drama, I tried to stay strong and tried to stay focused on the process and the rule of law, because I knew that it was only the rule of law that was going to protect me. And I ended up on CNN and MSNBC and trying to tell my story, because I felt like maybe the judges were listening. Maybe they were watching CNN in the airport, and I needed to make sure that they heard my case. We were asking them to reconsider giving that final ballot to my opponent.
Right. Good. Well, as well you should. And so the way it came down is there was the drawing out of the ceramic bowl. And who did the drawing out of the bowl? Someone you trust?
Yes. Yeah. So I never had any doubt about the integrity of the State Board of Elections. I thought the process was fair. But you know, it was just unfortunate that it had to come down to that. And that's why when I'm elected to the General Assembly, I want to look at legislation that would say if there is a tie at the state level, that you go to a special election. I think that would be the appropriate thing.
Right. And so now from this experience you had last year of tying exactly the number of votes as your opponent, what do you have to say to people who claim my vote doesn't matter?
Oh, yes, it does. And, you know, it's really important to make your voice heard, because you don't know until election day if your vote is the one vote that's going to make a change in your state legislature. You know, in this election, we had so much on the line because my race really determined the balance of power in the state of Virginia. If we had had one more vote, we may have been able to get gun legislation, gun safety legislation out of committee this year, but we couldn't. We may have had a cleaner outcome with Medicaid expansion in Virginia. We may have passed the ERA, which is something that my grandmother was fighting for in, you know, the 1920s. So we really, you never know when an election is going to turn the tide and make huge policy shifts in your state. And so as we get ready for congressional elections, I just encourage everyone to get out there, drag your neighbor out to vote, register a new high school student who's never voted. Everybody can find one person. Everybody can go out and find me that one vote.
Absolutely. So you're pointing out another aspect in your very special race is not only was your individual race for the state house determined really by one vote, but once that was decided, then that state rep seat went to the incumbent Republican, and that one seat made the majority in the Virginia House of Representatives. So instead of the majority being Democrat, which it would have been if you had won, it was Republican because your opponent won. And that shift, now that may not seem like much, one seat in the House of Representatives, but whoever has that one seat edge has the majority party position, and they can decide what legislation even gets brought to the floor to be voted on.
Yes, and that's a big deal in Virginia. And in fact, if I had been elected, if I had won the drawing of lots, we would have had a tie. So it would have been a power-sharing arrangement in the Virginia House. But that was important because right now the committees are very carefully crafted so that progressive legislation cannot get out of committee. And so you had over 70 bills on gun safety that were killed by a militia committee in the House. So being able to control the balance of those committees and have a say in who's on those committees is so important right now.
Yeah, exactly. And from the point of view of a citizen, you've mentioned a couple of issues, but they might say, well, what difference does it make if the Republicans or the Democrats control the House? You mentioned several, several bills that were there for gun safety that are being blocked and won't pass now because the Republicans and not the Democrats own it. You mentioned the Equal Rights Amendment, which is now I think there's only two states needed left for ratification for the ERA, and Virginia is top of the line in the country for where the next possible passage of equal rights would be. What are some of the other issues that you think are being stymied now because the Republicans have that majority instead of the power sharing?
Well, another issue that couldn't get out of committee would be increasing minimum wage in mm-hmm. Virginia. You know, we can't deal with that until, you know, we change the balance of power in the House. That's something that I think matters to a lot of working families. And I'm very interested in maternity leave.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to be very respectful during the recount process when I spoke to the media because I knew I was going to have to work with Republicans. And we needed a bipartisanship to pass some of these initiatives. And I felt like there was some interest among Republicans to get some family leave. Right now we have a teacher shortage. And why can't we use family leave as a way to give a benefit to teachers? We already give them a lot of leave after they give birth. Why not standardize it and make sure teachers can get 3 months off when they have a baby? It can be a medical, it can be under leave. It's something we're already doing it. So why don't we standardize it and make sure teachers know this is a benefit that we've got for you? And I really want to get up to the House because I feel like I can make that case and I could bring some Republicans along and then everybody looks good. Then we all have a success together and we're all doing things. So that's what I mean. All these solutions get stymied. These creative ideas get stymied when you have a such control over all of the committees. Good ideas can bubble up.
Right, exactly. And so the good news here is that you are undaunted and you are running again for the House of Representatives in Virginia for 2019. Is that right?
Yes, I am running again. I am very excited. I am very excited. And I think there's a blue wave really sweeping the country, and I'm swept up in it. My whole family is ready to go, and we just had a local election. And I'm pleased to say we had increased voter turnout in Newport News, Virginia, for our local election. And I think a lot of it has to do with this. We're all on this together, and I think that voting is the way to move forward, and in the fall, we're going to have a huge turnout.
Right, exactly. Well, good for you. I appreciate you running. I remember the first campaign where I was campaign manager. We made the candidate promise. She was a first-time candidate. We said, if you don't win, you have to promise us you're going to run again because it takes so much work to get the organization together and get your name recognition up and get the candidate to know the voters and the voters know them. That and a lot of times people do not win the first time out. So definitely good to run again once you've run. So good for you for staying in the game and running for House of Representatives for the next election.
And we have a lot of close districts because of the gerrymandering that has gone on in Virginia and in Pennsylvania and North Carolina across the country. And so you do have a lot of these really close gerrymandered districts, and that's why it is important to keep running. I also would really recommend to other candidates to make sure you have good field programs. I feel like the Obama campaigns were really good at knocking on doors and having those one conversations with voters. And that's what we need moving forward. I think there's been a lot of emphasis on other ways of communicating to voters, but you know, young people move. We've got to get creative if we want to find the younger voters. You know, we need to be at their clubs and at the community centers and at the universities. We need to be everywhere in order to engage younger voters. And you know, Election Day, you need an army of people knocking doors to ask people to go out and vote, to remind people to go out and vote. And I think the Democrats kind of lost sight of that for a while, the importance of that just grassroots organizing and getting out the vote. We had so many new volunteers because of the grassroots Indivisible movement. And those volunteers were magic because they would bring 10 new people with them to the polls. And so I think candidates need to make sure they're taking advantage of these grassroots networks that have sprung up in the Trump period. And those networks are powerful because they can bring in hundreds of new voters. And sometimes, you know, that's really a few percent is all it's going to take.
Right. Well, as we know, in your case, just a handful of votes, that seat would have been yours. And once that seat was yours, we could have had the balance power between Republicans and Democrats in the Virginia House and have power sharing instead of the domination by the Republicans who are blocking so much important legislation. So truly, yes. That's exciting that you see so many people coming. I remember thinking, I've been doing political work for years, working on elections, and I remember thinking the Democratic Party had seemed to become kind of a big fundraising machine. But I always believed in the power of the people and the talking directly to voters, whether knocking on their doors or calling them on the phone. That's back when people had phones. Now everybody's on the cell phones, and it's harder to reach voters that way. But it was Obama, as you mentioned, in Virginia. I saw that. I worked with his campaign a little bit. Extremely well organized and totally respecting the importance of the field and the importance of talking to people one-on-one about what matters to you, the voter, and then what is this candidate going to do once elected. So good for you for running a grassroots campaign.
Yeah, I think it's so important, and we're really lucky to have this energy that's out there. It's really like electroshock therapy to voters, like on a daily basis. They're all like, oh my God, I got to get out there and vote. And it's constant reminders to people to get out and vote, because we all know now what can happen if we're not engaged, if we're not involved.
Right. I think we all owe Trump some thanks for having mobilized the American citizens to say, no, that's really not who we are. That's not who we want to be. It's not what we want to do. So we got that new blood, new energy, new people coming in. You mentioned Indivisible, which we actually have had a wonderful guest from Indivisible on, talking about how they're organizing in every congressional district across the country to bring voters in to kind of block the worst of the Republican agenda in Congress and to try and get some positive solutions out there for the citizens. Did you see other groups active in Newport News? Like, did you see people from the Women's March, for example? Did they make themselves known to you? Or what were the groups that are now organizing and mobilizing that you felt and worked with on the ground?
Well, there's a group here called Peninsula Voices for Change. We had Peninsula Indivisible. And then, of course, we had some national groups like Sister District, and they actually sent people down to canvas and knock on doors for us. And Sister District is a really neat concept, because it's, if you live in a blue state and you want to get active and you want to flip another district, you adopt a purple district in another state. And then you can do fundraisers for them. You can go and canvas for them. And it's a great concept. And the other group that really helped us a lot was Forward Majority, was very, very helpful in getting the expertise we needed for social media and reaching out to people online. And then another group, Tech for Campaigns, provided website development for us and a digital plan. Those are things, this is kind of hard to get that in Newport News, Virginia. So having the talent base from across the country was wonderful. And I will say I ran in 2015, so I saw a huge difference between 2015. It was like, in 2015, I threw this big party for voters and nobody came out and voted. And this time we had a big party and everybody came and they voted. And the energy and the turnout was just astounding. So it's a really great time to be a candidate because you've got all these groups supporting you and helping you across the finish line. So I can't say enough about this kind of national support that we got in Virginia.
Yeah, fantastic. And it's great to see the groups out there. And like you said, and think about this, listeners, if you live in a blue state where you feel like the Democrats going to win anyway and your vote is less powerful there, you know, we're all jealous of those who live in swing states. There's other things you can do to help candidates who are running in swing districts or swing states. So, and that sister district concept you're talking about is where you can go from your Democratic safe district and go work in a district that might be a swing where you can help with door knocking or calling and help the candidate make a difference in that area. So,
yeah, and the postcards, too, I forgot to mention.
Oh, yeah.
There was a group, Postcards for VA, and I had people writing postcards into the district from California. And it really meant something. I knocked on someone's door who said, "I just got a postcard for you. And, you know, it was handwritten. They read it. It did help get the vote out in Newport News, Virginia.
Fantastic. And then there's this other group. I met you just a few weeks ago at a candidate training that was provided by the Progressive Change Coalition. They were training 450 people running for office, most of them first-time candidates, and it seemed to provide a lot of good training and information, and like you're talking about, a national talent base helping people with, you know, here's your headshot, here's your website, here's your campaign logo. What was your experience with that group?
Oh, I thought it was a great training. It really was. You know, when you're in the middle of a campaign, things move really fast. And if you don't have your message down, if you don't know your progressive values before you get into that campaign, you know, you might have some professionals who are going to manage your message for you. So I loved the proactive, progressive messaging that we got at PTLC. So, you know, what are your core values and how are you going to communicate them during the campaign? And you kind of know who you are and know, you know, figure out why you're running. And then those messages just come really natural during the campaign. And I think there was a lot of focus, too, on how to tell your own story, because we all have stories that get us turning points, that get us engaged in politics. And how do you communicate with voters what your values are and what your story is?
Right, and you did that so very well. I noticed right in the very first question when I asked you why you decided to run, I don't know whether you had thought about it in that context, but you right off said what mattered to you, loving your constituents, representing the people in Newport News, solving problems, that you're a former teacher and you want to help improve education for students. Boom. In 20 seconds, you laid out for us who you are, what you've done, what your values are, and what you want to do in office.
Yeah, well, and, you know, I think for me, a real turning point, I was the PTA president of one of our local middle schools, and I had time to do that because I have a flexible, you know, business with real estate, so I have time, and I asked other parents to help me. And I kept getting these responses like, oh, I work in Richmond and I have a 2-hour commute, or, you know, my husband's deployed. I don't have time to help you with PhD, with PTA. Or I would get responses like, you know, my grandmother is have to take care of her. And I realized that I had the time to serve. I had the time mm-hmm. to serve the community that a lot of other people don't have. And they need somebody to step up and run the PTA. They need somebody to be a leader. So I was happy to be the one to do it.
Fantastic. That's so exciting. And who are some of the women who have inspired you in your life around politics or just around good models for living?
Well, you know, the first example I would have to say, we have two delegates to our state house, Jennifer Boyce and Kathleen Murphy, and they both lost elections by small margins, but then they kept going and they didn't give up and they ran again and then they won and they learned how to be good candidates. And I just admire their perseverance and I think about them a lot. We have a state senator here named Mamie Locke, and I'll never forget, I was at a business event one time when someone said something about, you know, kids these days and, you know, the kids are terrible in schools. And she just shot back with such force about the goodness in our students and the hope of our young people, and really stood up for kids and students in this room full of businessmen. And, you know, I want to be like her. I want to be the one who is going to stand up for students and the people who aren't in that room with the business leaders and be the one who represents them. You know, I would say somebody else who's really inspired me in my life is just my grandmother, who I mentioned earlier with the Equal Rights Amendment. She was definitely somebody, you know, who was beyond her years in terms of being an adventurer and being a traveler. And she would always tell me about wearing pants when she rode her bike across Ireland and just adventures that she had had in her life. It was a good role model for me growing up about how to be brave, how to be adventurous. And that's what really it's all about in the end. I mean, we've got to be role models for each other. And women need to recognize leadership in each other. We need to recognize boldness in each other and bravery in each other, because a lot of times we're leading and we're doing the work, but we don't get recognized. And there's this huge mental bias toward men when it comes to leadership. There was an article recently in the New York Times that was about draw a leader, and a study of what people draw when they're asked to draw a leader. And it's pretty much always a man in a suit with a tie, and men and women do this. But somehow we don't envision women as leaders. And in order to break that cycle, we've got to recognize leadership in each other and celebrate it and fight to get more women in the highest offices in the land.
Absolutely. And we just have 30 seconds left, but do you have any advice for women who want to get into politics?
Well, I would say the first thing is help somebody else run first. Mm-hmm. Work for another candidate. See what it's like to run. Watch that candidate, see what she goes through, and get a feel for it. And then be a leader in something, whether it's your church, whether it's the PTA, whether it's the Chamber of Commerce. Just be the chair of the board. See how you like it. See if you can convince other people to go along with your ideas. And you know, try to deal with people's grievances to see if you can handle controversy. See if that works for you. And then once you've kind of tested the waters, I would say people need to run. Women need to run, and they need to go for it.
Fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have, and you are a great living model of the importance that every vote counts. Let's keep that in mind and vote, register to vote this year and every year. Shelley Simons, thank you so much for being on All Together Now, and good luck in your race.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.